Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. It is Sunday, March the 29th, 2015, and I want to thank you for listening. I have some really great questions, and I am so darn grateful. I really am. For the people who not only take the time to listen to this radio program, but for those of you who are kind enough, generous enough to offer your questions, it's very important. Your questions are extremely important to me. They represent what you're going through, your hesitations, your doubts, sometimes your fears, and how can I help you with all of this? It's a very, very, well, challenging yet honorable thing. I look at it as such an honor, and I want to thank again my sponsors for being behind me in everything that I do, trying to serve humankind in the way I do. It's a very necessary thing. It's not very prevalent on the internet. It's not prevalent, heck, anywhere. But somehow my sponsors see the value of it all. And I want to thank every one of you for making this program, our Aspire TV programs, and everything we do here on the website at aspire.org possible. Really, I'm very grateful. Let's go to the first question. This is from Richard in Long Island. He listens to us via the internet. Why can't I concentrate in meditation? I'm all over the place all the time. Then I give up and I don't care anymore. Then I begin the process again eventually because I feel guilty. Can you help me, Richard? I don't know if I can help you, Richard, but I'm going to offer to you something that hopefully will serve whatever it is that you're going through. The mind being pointed towards emotionality becomes split in many different ways. It becomes loyal to different sides of our emotions. One side saying no and one side saying yes, okay? We'll just keep it simple. And then those splinter off into other emotionalities like what's right, what's wrong, what's good, what's bad. And then those congregate in me as emotions. And then they split off into different factions. And pretty soon we are legions. We are many. We are so many. And these legions just grow and grow and grow and grow in us over a period of time. Now, because we point our minds at our bodies, thinking that, for instance, in my case, I'm a Gregory, and thinking for sure that I'm a Gregory, then all of my emotions are congregated and come up for, let's say, being satisfied, being tended to. The mind that I use in the form of Gregory looks at all of these emotionalities and chooses which one is most important and which one would probably bring the most either satisfaction or would bring possibly a sense of security or a sense of good, a sense of personage. That's a big one, having some kind of personage within me. So all of this goes on and on and on without me knowing it. It's in the unconscious. So how I have trained my mind, and I'll tell you how this all came about, Richard. You're not going to like me for this, but it's true. Too much self-indulgence. That's the whole key. The more I indulge my emotionality through, there's 100 million ways in our culture, through entertainment and food and alcohol and drugs and all sorts of things that we get involved in, we miss. We miss the whole thing. Hence, I feed the monster in me. You feed the monster in you, the real monster, the monster that is unhappy and trying to make it happy by gratifying it, the monster that is seeking to overtake me and give me identity like I'm a Greg and you're a Richard, and Richard wants this and is composed of that, that, and that, and Greg is wanting this and he's composed of this, that, and the other. And that's the way we live. So when you sit down to meditate, what you are looking at is how you have rationalized the emotionality of you, how you've appeased it, and how, shall we say, difficult it all is underneath, how difficult everything is underneath, the war that is going on within you that you have no idea is going on. So meditation becomes difficult because you have told your mind, we must fix all of this before we can be comfortable. And if we are not comfortable, it means that we need to fix all of this, which means I need to watch TV, or I need to have another piece of pie, or I need to, I don't know what you do, maybe drink, smoke pot, whatever it is that you do, in order to sustain a sense of normal. And as long as this goes on and continues, you will never be able to meditate. Now, I've been meditating for, I don't know how many years, and 40 or some, and my mind still does the same things. Okay, Richard, it still wants the same things. The difference between thee and me is only one thing. I don't take it seriously. I don't care what Greg wants. I don't care what he thinks. I really don't care. So whatever he's thinking, whatever he's doing, whatever he's pondering, whatever is going on within him is going on within him. But I live somewhere else without him. Now that pisses him off. And he gets rambunctious at times and gets screaming and yelling. But again, I know who he is. I know what he is. I don't take it seriously. And I keep moving on in my practice. I am passive. You must become passive towards everything that your emotionality is telling you you need to be concerned about or need to do. I used to say to my students when I was teaching them formally, if you were as passive towards your thoughts as you are towards what I'm trying to teach you, you would be enlightened by now, way by now. But they're not going to be passive towards their thoughts because, like yourself, so many people in this world, they think that whatever thought they have, it has to be attended to, and they aren't wise enough to follow the thought down to see exactly where the thought originated from. It originates from emotionality. When I am no longer interested or even curious about the, I like to think this about myself, about the basement floor and what's going on down there, that is when something miraculous can happen. Something beautiful, something delicate. Then you can do something, really do something. This something is beyond the concepts of right and wrong and good and bad. You're starting to see things the way they authentically are, instead of how you and I might imagine them to be. You say, why can't I concentrate in meditation? I'm all over the place. Because every time you sat down and watched CSI, or you went to the movies to be frightened by one of the sick horror movies that are so popular now, and while you had a really good time and really enjoyed it, it has now become something difficult in you. It has now become a barrier. You are programming yourself, as it were. You are training these emotions to be what they are to you. And you're training your mind to capitulate all of this. You're training your mind to say, yeah, this is what's right. This is what I need. This is what I want. How do you know if anything is right for you? It has to, quote unquote, feel good. But to what part of you? Well, typically, our emotionality. And as long as I'm living in that aspect of myself, I'm going to cause myself to be scattered. My mind is going to be jumping from here to there. Just Richard, if you can, just for a moment, watch your mind leaping around. Watch it go from here to there and over there and up to here and down to there. And ask yourself, why does this happen? What is it doing? And watch how it tries to overtake you so you won't ask that question anymore. So you won't have that concern or that curiosity anymore. It's trying to take everything that it does in its mischievousness, take it away from you. So if it does, and if it can, and if it will, then you are sitting there wondering, where did all of this go? What the heck happened? Once you understand that, once you get that, once that is incited by you, you'll never be overtaken again, because you'll know, and you'll just go back and follow the breath patterns that you're working on. This is why I give my students Tibetan pulsing. They have to follow breath patterns, and it's annoying to them to follow the breath patterns because it gets in the way. It interrupts their emotional obsession. And that really annoys the heck out of them. They blame the meditation. They don't look at themselves and go, wow, look what I've done to me. I've poured poop all over me all my life. I got poop in my brains and poop in my emotions. And look what I've done to myself. They don't want to consider that. That's normal life. You can't help do that. It's not. It may be normal life in the world, but you can help it. You can change it. You can do other things. You really can. But many are called, few are chosen. I hope that helps you, Richard. I'm honored that you wrote me, and thank you for your kind words about the website. And, of course, I will be sending to Richard an MP3 of this for his help in asking a terrific question. Please forgive me. Namaste. Wow. Does this fit any of you? Hey? You know, mind jumping around, da-da-da-da. Robert is the next question. Now, this one is a corker. I don't let things bother me. At least I used to think that, or so I thought, until a friend of mine who I'd not seen for many years came to see me and said, I look like hell. Well, I looked in the mirror, and he was right. I don't look good. Is it age? Or is it that everything is bothering me? Robert. Robert, you are a very interesting man. If a woman asked this question, she'd dart to the beauty parlor really quick and get a boob job as well. Maybe a facelift. But you are asking the right question. You are doing something unique. I was with a former student this week. I had lunch with him. I love him very much. And he's been going through a very tough time, a rough divorce, a rough life. He's really had a rough life. He's been ridden hard and put down wet, as we say. And it was all over. Yet I saw deep in his eyes that twinkle, that beauty, that loving kindness that had always existed. It just was covered over. And I could hear his soul screaming at me, help me, help me, help me out. I understand your question, Robert. And the timing of your question and my time with my friend, my former student, but is my friend, it is by no coincidence. Hopefully I'll be able to help both of you in one way or another. Listen to me. Robert, we live via the unconscious mind, and that's all we live by. We never consider anything else. The unconscious is connected to the collective unconscious. It's connected to intellectual stuff of right and wrong, good and bad. The unconscious mind is that part of me that doesn't want to understand what it's doing, like I explained to Richard just a moment ago, that I am congregating emotions and holding things back The whole idea is not to feel anything that is bad and not to feel too much good, because eventually you're going to get disappointed and blah, blah. And it all goes back to that over and over and over again. This is the way we live. Sad to say, but true. You say, I don't let things bother me. Well, I don't know what you mean by that, but if you're a typical male, it means that disappointments and hurts and things that have happened that maybe would take the wind out of your sails, you and I like to pretend, because we're men, don't bother us. But come to find out, they do. They bother us a great deal. So here we are, sitting in this neglect inside and pretending like it doesn't exist when it does exist. And then you have a friend who came to see you and says, hey, what happened? And then you look and see it for yourself. What did happen? What we suppress, we will express one way or another. So there is no getting around it that nothing can be hidden. Everything is out there. Everything is out in the open. What you and I think we're hiding in the shadows of our fears and desires and all that other stuff in our emotionality does come out. So, Robert, you need to get involved in a catharsis. You need an authentic practice, but there is no cure for the summertime blues here, as we're talking about, through intellectual pursuits or psychological analysis. It isn't going to help you. You're going to have to pursue something deeper inside you. You're going to have to seek the heart of your life. That's what it's all about, to find the heart of your life. If you find that, you'll find the meaning of your living, and that will change everything. 9 out of 10 people do not have the horsepower to seek the heart of their life. They have squandered their energies on side paths. A side path is where I go and I intellectually and emotionally indulge myself over and over and over again in order to appease my emotionality and make me feel as if I'm okay. All of that is thoroughly ridiculous, foolish, and futile. And no matter how I tell my students this, my friends this, or the public this, via radio or TV, commentaries or podcasts, video casts, it doesn't matter. The march goes on to futility. Because emotionality is more important to you than the state of your heart. We don't understand transmigration, where we enter into body after body after body, living a life of futility over and over and over again, without any sense of meaning. What would mean anything to you, Robert, really? Anything that appeases your emotionality, I would bet. Anything that emotionally would give you something new, turn you on to something better, as you would think, a new sensation emotionally. One that gratifies you. This is why people who are trying to recover from alcohol have to have a God. It makes them feel self-righteous. It makes them feel right. It renews their emotionality. Do they ever overcome their difficulty? No. No. They are constantly in recovery. And that's okay. I don't have a problem with that. But they never recover, because they're always on the line of trying to feed their emotionality what they think it needs in order to sustain itself. This will not help you. Let things bother you. You need to get into catharsis. If you go to the website at aspire.org and you go up to the little tab there that says shop, and you go into meditations, you will see that there is something called catharsis. Go take a look at it. It will help you immensely. You need to get your anger out, your fear, your boredom, your hate, your anger. And there are many different ways to do it through breath work. And as you do your catharsis, as you practice it, you'll start to feel a decline in all those things that are bothering you. Now, that will be a pitfall right there, because the more you do that, the more your emotions will feel desperate. And then it gets amped up. They get amped up. Then you get amped up. And then it can turn into a real hodgepodge if you're not careful. But if you're conscious, you'll see it for what it is. And you're letting the steam out without getting burned. And eventually you'll learn how to use that steam to propel you into a practice, an authentic one. And that's a longer story, but I'm not going to get into that right now. Go get a catharsis CD. I would start off with Heavy Breathers, maybe Morning Jewel, Energy Momentum 1 for those who kind of are sustaining their catharsis. It's a different kind of catharsis. It's very beautiful, meditative. But do any of them. Get involved. Otherwise, you can't be bitching about it. People like to complain, and then I'd say, oh, I can't do that catharsis stuff. I don't believe in that. Just another way to keep the crud going. Cathart, baby. Robert, thank you for listening. Please forgive me. Namaste. I wish I had more time. Last question from Joanne. In Tulsa, Oklahoma? Oh, my God. She asks, what place does sex have in a practice? I feel guilty for enjoying it. Joanne, anything like sex, food, entertainment can be a bridge or a barrier. If it turns into obsession, it becomes a barrier. If it can be understood for what it is, it can be a bridge. Sex can be a beautiful bridge. It can be used in many different ways. Even without intercourse, you can have sex. Sex is a state of being. It is not about reproduction. It is about, believe it or not, creativity. It is about beauty entering into your life. And sex can be a door where that beauty enters in and something miraculous happens. Healing happens. Great healing through the energy. Because through sex, dropping the idea of right and wrong, good and bad, and not using it to appease emotionality, you find it turns to communion. But it isn't just communion with your partner. It is communion with the oneness of life itself, with love. It is that strong. It isn't just about intercourse. So, in the beginning, we use intercourse as a way to ramp up into this oneness, to come into this oneness. And through our sexuality, we can change many aspects of our life. Our relationship to our emotions would be the first one. And that is a beautiful thing to do. When we are not emotionally obsessed anymore, when we can see, this could lead to something selfless. Then sex takes on a new meaning, a proportion that is absolutely different from any other you've ever known before. It can be a very beautiful part of your meditation. But most people are not mature enough to do this. With pornography everywhere, we keep it at the emotional level, where it aggrandizes our dark side and even creates a dark side in some people, rather than producing light inside, the state of unbearable lightness of heart, of love. This is a tantric teaching. And I would suggest, Joanne, that you consider Tantra. It is a very beautiful experience. It opens up many things and has nothing at all to do with the obsessive compulsiveness that most people have about sex. It opens up meditation, beauty, compassion, and love. If you have ever had really beautiful sex, you would be unconscionably generous, deeply, deeply forgiving, and extremely humble. I can always tell when someone's had a great sex life, and very few have, because they're unconscionably generous, they're deeply forgiving, and they're not emotionally involved in right and wrong and self-righteousness. They are unconscionable beings. And just because you have orgasms doesn't mean you're having good sex. It has to go further. It must go deeper. And typically with people, it never does. So it only remains something that most people are guilt-ridden about. I hope that helps you. If you want to know more, email me. I'm out of here. I want to thank the people who offered these beautiful questions. I want to again thank my sponsors, and I want to thank you for listening. If you ever have a question, something you would like me to talk about, come to the website at aspire.org, and at the top of the page, you will see contact. Just click on it and send me an email. I'm out of here. Have a wonderful day. Please forgive me. Namaste.